Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca, Mesut Özil, el envío al área, el remate, y ahí está el primer tanto del partido. No lo celebra, por supuesto, Aaron Ramsey. 0-1 para el Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always, with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Apologies to everyone if this sounds a little bit different or weird, but it is different and weird because I'm sitting in a hotel room in London trying to record this on my laptop, and the stuff we normally use didn't work. So, and also, I'm sitting on a chair, which when I move on it sounds like farting.
So if you I heard that earlier, and I thought you had farted, I must confess.
No, I haven't farted, and I'm not going to fart, but if you do hear farting noises during this podcast, it is the leather chair. Hang on, I think I can make it do it. Hang on. See?
Amazing there. Control of your sphincter muscles there. On command.
Indeed, indeed.
So why are you in London, Andrew?
Why, James? Indeed. I'm going to the FSF Awards, that's much more difficult to say than it should be, which are taking place tonight because I've been nominated for Best Blogger. So I'm going to go to that. And I'm going to tap up Sergio Aguero while I'm there.
Good, good.
Because he's up for Best Player. So I'm gonna have a word, bring him on board, get him in and
see what you can do.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we need more strikers.
That's exactly what we need.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's why I'm here. So it should be a good night, hopefully.
Yeah, it'll be very fun, hopefully. Yeah, it sounds lovely.
Yes. So without further ado, shall we talk about West Brom?
Yes, let's.
Let's. What did you think? That's a very simple question.
Yeah. I was delighted to win another match, two in a week.
You could get used to it very quickly, couldn't you?
Well, I could, yeah. And, well, we've got another two next week, so let's hope it continues. I thought positive signs. I was surprised by the starting lineup, I have to say, when that came out. I didn't expect to see Welbeck and Giroud in the team together. But heartened, certainly, to see Laurent Koscielny back. I just think that's a massive, massive boost.
It made such a difference, didn't it? Because I think you could see there was immediately a solidity at the back that hasn't been there. Mertesacker looked about 50 times more comfortable than he does alongside Monreal. And that's not to be critical of Monreal, but I think that's the reality of the situation. He just looks happier when he's got Koscielny alongside him.
Yeah, I think so. I think all the back four played well, to be honest. I thought Callum Chambers had a very good game on the defensive side.
Yeah.
Looked pretty solid in at right back. And Emi Martinez as well, I think, deserves credit. I think since he's come into the team, he's really impressed me. I remember the player who played at Reading, you know, a couple of years ago and conceded five, I think it was. And he looks transformed. I mean, obviously that loan spell at Sheffield Wednesday worked wonders for him. And I have to say, I feel pretty sort of eerily comfortable when he's between the sticks.
Yeah, he seems a very calm young man, doesn't he? Because even when Vito Minone had some good games for us, you always felt that there was this jitteriness to him in the way that he played. And that doesn't seem to be there with Martinez. He's like stone cold and he's only played five games for us.
Yeah, well, someone said that, you know, in some ways he's a bit of an antithesis to Wojciech Szczesny, in that he's not obviously brimming with personality, you know. He's quite a quiet guy, it seems, quite sort of calm, as you say. But
the goalkeeping Aaron Ramsey, maybe?
Perhaps, and in some respects, in that position, you know, that's quite nice not to have that sort of heart-in-mouth moment all too often. I've been really impressed with him. I think he's done really well.
All right, so look, it was interesting then, if we go back up the other end of the pitch, that he played Giroud, Welbeck and Alexis, which is, I guess, a dynamic front three. in terms of the two that are outside Giroud, who's always going to be that focal point in the attack. You know, let's not pretend he could play wide right or left. He just can't do that. And I don't think either of them look particularly uncomfortable operating off him. And I think in the first half in particular, we saw some very good signs in that he was able to bring others into play in around the box, that he something he does on a fairly regular basis. We created some opportunities from that, and he did seem to link well at times with Welbeck in particular.
Yeah, I love all that one-touch stuff that Giroud offers you, you know, on the edge of the box, those quick little interchanges passes. I think there was one really nice one that set up a chance for Santi Cazorla on the edge of the box. And that is really encouraging. As I say, I was surprised to see it. I think it's quite... It was more attacking than I necessarily expected, but I suppose what Sanchez and Welbeck give you in those wide off areas is that they will work back, won't they? They will cover their fullback when necessary, and there aren't many strikers you could say that of. Perhaps not, you know, not even in our squad. So I think it was encouraging. I'll be intrigued to see what happens come Wednesday in Southampton, if it's something that he feels he can persist with in the longer term. What do you think?
I think it's something he's obviously been looking forward to, because I think he likes Giroud maybe more than some fans like him, but I think he likes what he brings to the team in terms of his play in around the box and how he brings others into play, and he does give you a different dimension to the attack that Alexis and Welbeck. Alexis is very much an individualist. Welbeck I think has got a great team ethic and perhaps could be a bit more selfish at times, but I think it worked, to be honest. And I think if you're going to look for encouraging signs, then the fact that we didn't suffer because of it was good. I thought maybe at times we got a little bit narrow, because you have Giroud centre, Alexis comes inside to get involved, Welbeck came inside from the left as well, and it did get a bit narrow, and we know that's been something of a failing of ours down the years. But look, you know, I think it's too early to make any definitive judgment, but based on what we saw against West Brom, I wouldn't have any problem trying it again.
No, I mean, is there any argument that you don't get the best of Alexis Sanchez when he's starting out in those wide positions? He had a quieter game. Do you think that's to do with that, or do you think it's just an inevitability that he won't perform unbelievably in every single match?
I think it's probably the second thing, and I think also we have to look at the amount of work that he's done over the last 3-4 months in terms of what he's brought to the team. I won't say he's necessarily carried the team, but he's shouldered the responsibility for the most part, hasn't he? Welbeck has chipped in with some goals, but for the most part it's been Alexis, and he's been the one driving the team forward and scoring goals. And I think he's going to have some quiet days, and he's going to be a bit tired and a bit jaded at times, and I think that there was evidence of that against West Brom on Saturday. But what was good from that point of view then was that when he didn't perform, that we did have other players who stepped up and took some of the responsibility and ultimately were decisive. If you look at Welbeck's goal, Santi Cazorla as well, playing in the number 10 role, was absolutely brilliant in the first half in particular.
Yeah, I think his form's had a real upturn. He was struggling, it seemed to me, a few weeks ago, and I think there were question marks over his place in the team. But injuries to, you know, Mesut Ozil and Jack Wilshere have opened up the possibility for him to play as that number 10, and he seems to be relishing it, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, and it was a brilliant assist for the goal. I mean, there was a moment, was it in the first half, or could have been in the second half as well, where there was a similar kind of a move, and so, I can't remember who crossed the ball, it could have been Gibbs, and Cazorla was the one trying to get on the end of the header. And of course, you know, he doesn't necessarily have the height for it. It would have been the perfect height, for example, if Welbeck had been the guy coming in to get on that. But Cazorla just skidded over his head. But I thought the assist was fantastic, because he showed skill, strength, pace, and the delivery into the middle was fantastic. And Welbeck's finish, I thought, was really, really excellent.
Yeah, I love a powerful header like that. You know, yeah. I think it's because we were starved of them for some years at Arsenal. Maybe we appreciate them all the more.
Yeah,
when they do come around. I think, did I see you retweet or someone retweeted? I think that's the fourth headed goal we've scored this season, which is unusual for us, certainly.
Yeah. Well, you know, Alexis has got a couple, hasn't he?
Yeah.
His was a thumper. But yeah, I mean, that is something that we have been missing, particularly with Giroud out. He's good in the air. He scored some fantastic headers for us, and it does give your attack another dimension. And ultimately, that was the difference between 3 points and 1 point on Saturday.
Yeah, and good for him to score well back. I think he'd gone 6 games without a goal, so probably good for his confidence to get back on the score sheet.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he needed that.
In terms of the we talked about the shape of the team and the way they set up, but did you feel that they approached the game strategically any differently? It seemed to me like there was sort of more of a willingness to let, especially in the first half, let West Brom have the ball and try and hit them on the counter-attack with our speed.
Yeah, I think one of the things that struck me was it was the forwards doing the pressing, not the midfielders getting ahead of themselves in a way. Mm. And one of the things that stood out for me was Matthew Flamini, who I guess has had some critics because the level of his performances haven't been top class this season. I think that's fair to say. But he was really disciplined, and what really stood out was the fact that he completed 96% of his passes. Mm. I think it's probably an underrated part of his game, his distribution, but that was, I think, exactly what we needed in a game like that, away from home, that we talk about Arteta giving us that bit of, what's the word I'm looking for, confidence or surety on the ball, that we don't give it away in dangerous positions. And that was the case with Flamini. And I think there was an inbuilt cautiousness. I think that some of the stuff that we learned from the Dortmund game was obviously present, that we weren't going to get ourselves caught out on the break. And that was particularly true when they put three attackers on. They threw on an Ichibi, they had Berahino on, they had Samaras on. And we weren't going to get caught out. And I think it was the defensive display was really good. A lot of backs to the wall defending, winning lots of headers, making lots of clearances. And I think there was obviously a safety first approach that you could see, particularly from the fullbacks, Chambers and Gibbs. There was one moment where Gibbs was running back to chase a ball, and there normally you would see him try and look for a man or play it up the line, but he just whacked it straight out.
Yeah,
and Chambers did much the same as well. A lot of his clearances were industrial, straight into Rosette at times. There was one moment where I thought he might just see the ball out for a goal kick, but he wasn't taking any chances. He just smashed the ball out for a throw-in as far as he could. So I think that was probably part of the instruction.
Mm. So. Yeah, it seemed to be. And I thought there were more encouraging signs. Late on, we had some set pieces. It was notable that as against Dortmund, I don't think Per Mertesacker was going up for those by that point. Mm. So there just was that little bit of caution in our approach, which enabled us to see it through. And another clean sheet, which is a real bonus.
Mm. Confidence. A little boost. I think you got to take them when you can get them.
Yeah.
So look, the other issue of that game was the banner unfurled at the end.
Banner gate.
Everything's a gate these days.
I know. Terrible.
They should have a gate about gates.
Yeah.
gate.
It's inevitable.
It has to happen. Your thoughts?
Right. Well, I don't really know. I mean, look, I kind of feel that it's unpleasant. It's uncomfortable to see. I didn't like watching Arsene Wenger's post-match press conference when he's being asked about that banner, and whatever he may say, you can see that it's painful for him. Obviously it is. It's a club he's dedicated so much of his life to. And to see however much of a minority it was, sort of obviously displaying their discontent with him, is always going to be a difficult situation. However, I do respect the rights of fans to say whatever they may think, whether or not it's what I would do. I kind of think you're entitled to have your say. I didn't think it was full of invective or abuse. It wasn't calling him names. It wasn't, you know, calling him a fraud or whatever it might be. It just was signalling what many people think, which is that maybe his time with Arsenal is approaching a close. So I can't condemn it too harshly, but it doesn't change the fact that it's quite uncomfortable to see. Do you know
sure.
what I mean?
Sure.
What yeah. do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right in a way that people have every right to express their opinion, and that if you pay your money and you go as a fan, then you know you've got that right to say what you want. I don't know. I just thought maybe at the end of a game where we'd won 1-0 and the players are coming over and thanking the fans, and that maybe the timing of that isn't necessarily right. But then you have to ask, when is a good time?
Well,
if
this
you,
is
if
it.
You want to make that point, when is a good time? Do you do it outside the ground before a game where it will be pretty much ignored? Or, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think I think the reaction to it, well, I posted a picture of it on Twitter and there was a lot of negative reaction to the banner itself. People were just saying, look, it's not the time, it's not the place. But if you do feel that way, then when is the time and the place to get that point across? I just think maybe it feeds into maybe there's a simplistic idea of it's time for the manager to go without enough talk or discussion about what happens if that happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's highlighting a problem without proposing a solution.
Yeah.
I agree with you on the timing. I think if you did it before the game, you know, you'd be accused of kind of distracting from the match. If you did it, I think it's unthinkable to do it during a game.
Yeah.
When you know, you need to be behind the team and behind the manager and doing all you can to offer them support. So in some ways, I can see why after the match, you know, is the solution that they arrived upon. And I also think that timing is crucial in that if this had come 7 days previously, I don't think it would have received quite as negative a reaction. I think that two wins has obviously changed, you know, the Wengerometer has swung slightly. And in some ways, I sort of think if you believe that and, you know, two wins isn't enough to change your mind, you know, I think there are bigger things at play. But
should you then wait for another bad result before you do it? Or, you know,
I don't know. I mean, would that just be jumping on? Do you know what I mean? Would that just be jumping on the zeitgeist or what have you? I don't know. In some ways, I sort of think if you've got conviction about what you think, then one or two results. I mean, obviously, 10 results, that might give you cause to change, but one or two, not necessarily.
Yeah.
Again, it's two struggling teams. But it's a really difficult one. And I think that the biggest problem with it is that obviously the media pick up on it and it becomes a symbol of what Arsenal fans feel. And I think people then feel like the banner is speaking for all of them. And that's where it becomes most awkward, because obviously that's not a view that all fans share.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know, what do? You just respect, you have to respect people's right or to make their point? I don't know. It is a difficult one because, you know, the timing after a game, after a win, after two wins in a week, like you say, that's not going to convince everybody that it's that all the problems have been solved, because clearly that's not the case. Not all the problems have been solved. So I don't know. I think you're right. I think in a way the fact that it gets picked up in the media, it becomes more than it actually is, in a way.
Yeah, ultimately, how many people are holding up that banner? You know, 4, 6? I don't know. But it's a fraction, isn't it? It's a tiny, tiny minority. Now, actually, I do think that that banner does represent the views of more than 6 people. If you look at the online discourse, it's clear that there are a lot of people who think that. Whether or not they would choose to express that at a match in the way that happened is another question entirely. But I think, you know, I was looking at some of the banners they've held up at Newcastle, where obviously they're very, and with some cause, dissatisfied with the manager there. And you see the invective and the abuse. And I have to say, in defence of the banner, I felt it was uncomfortable, but not unreasonable. That's basically my point of view on it.
Yeah. And look, you know, the world we live in, where perhaps the manager and the people at the club are quite insulated to a certain extent, because things can be dismissed if it's just online. For example, it can be dismissed as, well, that's just people ranting online. But when it becomes real and at a match, I don't know. Maybe it just makes them more aware of the opinion of fans. Whether or not they care, that is the other question.
I think that's what drives people to it. Like, we've seen a lot of crazy things in the past year, you know, the trend of hiring planes. But I think it's because fans probably do increasingly feel that, you know, they don't have a huge voice and that clubs aren't listening to them. So I think things like this will become increasingly common as that distance grows. And I think social media, it is screaming into a void, really, in terms of the club actually listening. I don't think they give it any credit. So I think you know, wanting the club to take notice of your views is fine. And I and to be honest, I think they will much more with it having taken place at a match day.
Mm. And look, you know, it's really not the end of the world if a banner goes up. I don't think so. You know, you're right, it is uncomfortable, and it wasn't great looking at Arsene Wenger having to face that question, because what can he say, you know, to a room full of journalists about it? Because I think it must have been very hurtful and painful for him to realise that it's got to a point where fans are making banners and bringing them to games away from home. But it's not the end of the world. And if we win games and if results improve, we won't see those. We won't see those kind of protests. So maybe if it sparks things into life a bit more work, bit more investment in the team, who knows? Maybe,
who knows?
Maybe it might. You know, ultimately, be there could be a positive aspect.
Here's a cool fact: a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact: you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Expect to it as well, so.
Yeah, force for good, perhaps.
Perhaps. All right, look, we're going to take a short break. We're back with part two and your questions after this.
Hello, welcome back to the Askcast Extra. We're going to have a look at some of your questions now. Starting off with this one from Steve Moore, 4116. Steve Moore there. And he asks...
Steve Moore.
Yeah, the man, Stevie Moore. He says, was the Alexis Giroud-Welbeck axis a necessary one-off or something you'd like to see more of?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing more of it. I think under the circumstances... it was a necessary kind of selection because I think probably he rested Oxlade-Chamberlain. There was a bit of, I don't want to say concern about that, but I think maybe there could have been a fear that, you know, he's fatigued or carrying a little bit of a knock. We don't know that. And it's hard to think that he would just drop him, considering he's been one of our best players. So I'd like to think that there was probably something a bit cautious behind his resting, shall we say, against West Brom. But yeah, I think it could work quite well, to be perfectly honest. I think there's three different skill sets there. We touched on it earlier on. I like what Giroud gives us as a central option. I like what Welbeck can do from the left. He didn't seem particularly perturbed by it. And, you know, he started on the left and he got his first goal in six games. So let's not pretend that that's going to stop him scoring. It's about us taking our chances. And look, I think we are at some point going to have to look at Alexis and try and keep him in the best shape possible. We're going to have to rest him a little bit too, so we need to have options, and we need to look at ways that we can do that. And maybe one of the ways that you could do that is bringing Theo Walcott back in place of Alexis, for example, when he's fully fit, and for a game that you feel that you can do without your best player. Because it's wrong to expect him to keep up that intensity throughout the season. So look, you know, I think if we can find variations in our forward play that might suit particular opponents more than others, you know, the manager might look at playing that trio against a certain type of team and a different combination against other teams. So, you know, I'm all for it. A little bit of experimentation is good, and I think it worked all right.
Yeah, one thing I really liked was, I mean, I know that a slight issue with it was that we seemed a little bit narrow at times, but I also really liked how many men it enabled us to get in the penalty area.
Yeah.
Which I think is something we've lacked a little bit in recent seasons. And there were times where the ball would be wide and we would have at least two, sometimes three men in the box. And I think it did improve our threat. I know we only got the one goal, but if you look about how that came about, it was a, you know, from a header from a cross, and we nearly had another one with Cazorla. And I think with a bit more understanding between those players, there's definitely goals in that combination.
For sure.
And the other thing I just wonder is Arsene kind of doing some of the groundwork for Theo Walcott's return? You know, there's been a lot of debate about how you get him and Alexis Sanchez in the same team. And it seems to me that a system like this, with two wide forwards playing off Olivier Giroud or even Danny Welbeck potentially, is what would suit Theo enormously. So
yeah.
I think, you know, over the next month or so, we might persist with this formation, which I think would be a good thing. I certainly prefer it to the kind of the 4-1-4-1 that we were seeing in the early part of the season.
Yeah, okay. Well, on that then, here's a question from Manny at Mansurotics.
Okay.
And he says, do you think Santi Cazorla suits our system in the number 10 position better than Mesut Ozil? And I think obviously the way we played on Saturday meant that we had a number 10, if you like. And Cazorla really enjoyed himself in there.
Well, I mean, you mentioned earlier that it looked like we were kind of sitting the defence and the most of the midfield a little deeper, so Ramsey and Flamini in this case, and then allowing players to press from the front. And I certainly think Cazorla offers you more than Ozil in that regard. He works quite hard defensively, harrying people off the ball. And in terms of going forward, I thought he joined up the play extremely well. He played there for most of his first season with us, didn't he, Cazorla?
Yeah.
And was player of the season by distance. He was outstanding in that year, and although he's played well on the left since, I don't think he's ever quite recaptured that form. He got shifted in the kind of the reshuffling of the team when we moved to a more defensive style, when Koscielny came in and that base of Ramsey and Arteta, I think. But yeah, is he more suited than Ozil? I don't know. I'm going to be fascinated to see how Ozil fits back in January when he returns, because obviously last time we saw him, he was playing predominantly on the flanks, but we're now talking about people like Welbeck, Sanchez, Walcott in those positions. So I think we'll see him coming back into the centre, but he'll have a fight in his hand with Santi Cazorla. I think if Cazorla keeps playing as he is, you know, Ozil will have to perform pretty well to reclaim his place. What about you? What do you reckon?
My thoughts are that, sorry, somebody keeps trying to ring me here on Skype. That's weird. My thoughts are that this particular system would suit Ozil really well.
Yeah.
Maybe he's been a bit unfortunate in that, you know, we've had this 4-1-4-1, or we haven't been able to tie down this particular system while he's been fit. So yeah, I think it'll suit him a lot better, to be perfectly honest. Cazorla is also capable of playing wide as well. I think, you know, if need be, we could put him in one of those wide positions to the left. This fucking cunt keeps calling me. I don't know who the hell it is. So I've lost my train of thought, but I tend to agree with you that he's got a fight on his hands. But if we keep this shape, if we keep this system, then I think the very obvious choice in the long term for the number 10 role is Ozil.
Yeah, I think so as well. And if you think about our best form of last season, that's where he was playing, and he was playing well, certainly in the first half of the campaign. So I think that's where he'll come back in.
Yeah.
Let's have another question on the midfield. This is from Ty Hamilton. And he asks, all things considered, so remember to consider all things.
All of them.
All the things.
Okay.
Is a CM now a priority over a CB in January?
All things considered?
Remember, all the things.
Okay, just if there's silence here on considering all those things, because there are a lot of things to consider.
Yeah.
Because if you have Debuchy back, then your need for a centre-back isn't quite as
pronounced
as it was. Nevertheless, you're still in the same position where an injury to Debuchy or an injury to one of your centre backs leaves you in the shit. So I think, and I've maintained this since the start of the season, that we needed another centre half, and I still think we need another centre half more than we need another central midfield player, to be perfectly honest.
Let's just sort of talk about this though, because last time I spoke to you, we still had Mikel Arteta and Jack Wilshere available for selection. Do we need a central midfielder in addition?
Depends how long Arteta's out.
Yeah.
And maybe if we're talking again about bringing Theo Walcott back into the team, we've got to find somewhere for Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain to play. And Arsene Wenger has always spoken about him as a central midfield player. He said that that's where his position is going to be in the long term. After making some good steps forward and some good progress this season, maybe that is the solution. Mm. Maybe that's what you've got to do, rather than buy in another central midfield player and all of a sudden Arteta's fit again, Wilshere's fit again. You know, who do you get? Do you get a Shellstrom? Another BMX bandit? I mean, what do you do?
I hear he's playing really well, by the way. Some Swedish fans tweeted me the other day. He's playing out of his skin in Russia, so...
Right.
Pick up the phone.
Yeah, well, no, I would still go with a centre-half over a central midfielder.
I think it's a delicate one, because I think...
Are we talking a normal central midfielder here, or a DM?
I think we're talking... In my head, we're talking a DM, yeah.
Yeah, but you said CM. There is a very subtle difference there, and I considered all the things.
Well done.
But I didn't consider there was an alphabetical issue with this question.
Well, Ty Hamilton's, he's pulled the wool over my eyes there. I think that, look, we do need a centre-back, and I don't think I would dispute that at all. We desperately do. But I wonder if... the type of defender we need and the type of midfielder we need are potentially different, in that if Arsene Wenger really does believe that Callum Chambers is, you know, a superb centre-half in the making, then I feel like we need, in holding midfield, we might require a starting player, whereas in central defence, we might require a backup player.
Right.
And so I sort of think if you gave me £30 million, I'd put 20 million of it into the midfield and 10 into the defence. That's sort of how I weight it in terms of priority.
Right. If you gave me £30 million, I'd be fucking gone and living on an island somewhere. Maybe that's the difference between you and I.
Yeah, maybe.
All right. Well, I see the need for an improvement in that holding midfield position. What I don't see is the manager, A, finding that player in January, and B, doing anything about it in January anyway, because he'll look at Arteta and he'll look at Flamini, whatever people might think about them and whether they think they're good enough. It's really about what Arsene Wenger might do, and I don't see him doing it in January, whereas I do see him buying a centre half because the need is just so pressing.
I think you're right in terms of that. I think that's what will happen. Cool, let's have another question.
Okay, this one comes from Hollow Man.
He is
at Javed Mushin AFC. I don't know if he's actually hollow. Because
there's a film, isn't there, Hollow Man?
It could well be.
That's Kevin Bacon, I believe, is entirely hollow.
Right.
Yeah, I'm serious. He's like, he's not actually hollow, he's invisible. Because as far as I'm aware, he's not hollow because he, you know, you can't like put your hand through him. You just can see through him.
But that's not hollow. Hollow is having nothing inside you. So he would just have, like, his skin. But what would be holding his skin onto his...
He'd just be like a sort of Russian doll.
Yeah, that's a badly named film.
It's terrible. The physics of it are all over the place. I'll be fair, I haven't seen Hollow Man, so I'm judging from a trailer.
My suspicion is that it's probably not very good.
No.
And that's nothing to do with Kevin Bacon. All right, here's his question. He says, if it's confirmed by Arsene today that both Gibbs and Monreal are out, who would you choose to play at left-back, presumably for the Southampton game?
I had this question as well. It's a tricky one, isn't it? Well, I thought I'd had a genius solution in the shape of Francis Coquelin, because I saw him play left-back against Southampton in the League Cup, and I made him our best player that night.
Yeah, he was good, yeah.
Really, really good in that position. But you tell me he has extended his loan with Charlton. Is that correct?
Yes, Charlton will get to play with Arcock until December 31st.
Well, there you go. Difficult one then, isn't it? I mean, so there is the option of Flamini, who played left back in that famous Champions League run many years ago now. But that leaves you with a problem in central midfield, potentially. You know, there's the nuclear solution of Flamini to left back, Bellerin to right back, Chambers to midfield, which, we, you know, is an option that we haven't ever seen but has been talked about. Mm-hmm. Chamberlain potentially in central midfield as well, but I feel like you need Flamini in there at the moment just for the defensive cover that he theoretically offers. So I think it'll be I think it'll be somebody like Bellerin put in at left back. We've seen Arsene Wenger put right backs across to left back before. Bakary Sagna played there, even Carl Jenkinson played there on one occasion. You could put Bellerin at right back and move Chambers, but that's two shifts in the back four, and I think Arsenal want to keep it to a minimum. So I think we might see Hector Bellerin at left back. That would probably be my call. What about you?
I think it'd probably be Chambers, because I think he looks at Chambers as a very versatile player who would be more able to cope with playing at left back than Bellerin maybe would be able to cope playing at left back. That Bellerin is still so inexperienced that he's reluctant even to use him at right back, as we've seen.
True.
So I think if he had to play Bellerin, he'd play Bellerin in his more natural position, and I think he pushed Chambers across to left back. But let's hope that it doesn't come to that.
Yeah, let's hope. I mean, I think they both look like fairly minor knocks. Kieran Gibbs finished the game. I mean, touch wood. I mean, this is Arsenal we're talking about, but I think they should be all right. One thing worth noting, though, if we do have to play a right-footed player at left-back, is that Southampton tend to play with Tadic on the right wing, who's actually left-footed and always coming inside. So having a right-footed player over there might not be the disadvantage that it immediately looks.
Oh, good thinking. That's some good awareness right there.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
So somebody watched Southampton play yesterday.
All right.
Okay, this comes from Pete Coe, and he asks, is there any chance Wojciech Szczęsny could be made to earn his place back rather than just be allowed to return when fit?
I don't think so. I think he comes straight back in as soon as he's fit, because as much as I've been impressed by Martinez, I think Szczęsny is the number one goalkeeper at the club. I think he's the best goalkeeper at the club. His form obviously has been a little bit suspect this season, but I think that has as much to do with the defensive issues that the team have had overall. He looks a little bit less assured, a little bit less calm, but then why wouldn't he when everything in front of him is shambolic? You know, I think he's tried to make up for things in a way that perhaps he shouldn't have, a little bit coming out of his area at times. But I don't think he's been particularly bad this season. I think we forget very quickly that he was the best goalkeeper in the Premier League last season. He shared the golden fist with Peter Cech. And I think if you put him in behind a team that's more defensively stable, behind a back four that's more stable, then he'll be better. And I think he's the best goalkeeper. But I don't think it's any harm for him to know that Martinez has come in and done really well and earned some plaudits, and Ospina will be back soon, and hopefully that will put pressure on him in a good way. And I think what we've seen in the past is that Szczęsny responds well to pressure for his place. When he did have that little bit of a sit-down with Fabianski taking his place, he responded very well and had his best season following that. So, no, I think he comes back in, but I've been impressed by Martinez. But for me, Szczęsny comes back.
Yeah, for me too. I mean, I think, you know, Martinez has done well, but it's important not to get carried away with that. And I think hopefully it will have served the purpose of Szczęsny, you know, picking up his alertness and his sharpness anyway, because he'll have seen how well Martinez has done. If he's any kind of sportsman, any kind of competitor, that should spark a bit of a surge in his performance. And as I say, I think he's been a bit unfortunate this year, Szczęsny. I think he had a good season last year, and he's still the man for the number one shirt for me.
Yeah, all right. We're going to have one final question because I'm pressed for time today.
Okay.
Because I'm here in London. So the question is from West the Gooner. And Wes, the E has got an umlaut over it. I don't know if that works. But he wants to know, do you put warm or cold milk on Weetabix?
This, I saw this question, Andrew, and I suspected you might ask me this. So don't worry, I've done my thinking. I actually do something quite bizarre where I put cold milk on my Weetabix. I mush it into a kind of porridge and then I heat it up as one entity.
What kind of a monster are you?
I know. What madness is this? But I can tell you, it's a delicious outcome.
Would it not be easier to mush it if you just put the hot milk on it or warm milk on it in the first place?
It's not the same, because when you put it in with the milk into heat, it kind of congeals in a different way. Something to do with, I don't know, the evaporation. I'm not a chemist, but I do know I've created something magical.
Right.
What about yourself?
I would be a warm milk person, for sure.
Yeah.
I never quite understood the cold milk on Weetabix, or even shredded wheat. And definitely not Shreddies. Anyone who puts cold milk on Shreddies is.
Are you warm milk on all cereals, then?
No. Just the kind of...
Wheatier ones,
yeah. I mean, you wouldn't put warm milk on Cocoa Pops, for example.
No, that'd be heresy.
That would be just abysmal. So, no, I'd be a warm milk on Weetabix guy. But I would imagine the last time I ate Weetabix was about 1985.
Okay. I have had them since then. I mean, I'd say we'd probably be talking around the turn of the century for me. But the most recent one. But, yeah, they're still good. I mean, props to them.
To each their own.
Hey.
That's what you got to do. All right, we're going to leave it there for this week. Thank you for listening. We're back with another Arsecast Extra next Monday. There'll be the Arsecast on Friday. James, as always, thank you very much.
Cheers. Good luck tonight at the awards.
Thank you.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.